that should the need arise, you will find me. Here's your portal scroll. I don't like going back on my word, so the information about Guernica's power will now be sent to the Emperor and the Lord of Cartus. But right now, I think it would be worth recounting it out loud. It all began long ago, when dragons still lived in Barleona, and gods walked among mortals as if they were equals, teaching and mentoring them. The Dark Forest, or, as it was called then, Lightswood, was home to one extremely mysterious creature. The second son of Barleona's creator lived here.
"Father!"
The thunder-like shout sent cracks through the walls on an enormous alabaster white hall. The armor-clad guards gripped their pikes, hoping that today the god's tantrum would end as quickly as all the others. Stepping behind the massive pillars that held up a vaulted ceiling, the guards looked on in horror at the blood-drenched mosaic floor of the main hall of Lightswood. Being unlucky enough to catch the eye of Herishes right now could easily mean joining those 43 unfortunates whose blood had covered the mosaic depicting the creation of the world. The terrible thing that set the teeth of battle-hardened Nagas on edge, making their tails twitch in wild panic, was that the blood on the floor did not congeal, but was being gradually absorbed by the enormous throne, cut out of snow-white stone. The kneeling man, if such a term could be used for this creature, was swaying from side to side, his hands covering his face, as if he just heard the news of the most devastating loss in his life. The wailing, mixed with hoarse growling and curses hurled at all living things, made the guards hide deeper and deeper behind the pillars. Today, the Lord's outburst had lasted particularly long. This could mean real trouble.
"Father! What is all of this for? Why did you leave this world to me? I don't need it! I hate Barleona!"
"Brother!" A lightning flashed, and next to the groaning lord of Barleona, there appeared, shining like the morning sun, Eversquator, the eldest son of the world's founder.
"You speak sedition! How can you, having given life to an entire host of gods, hate what Father had created?"
"A host of gods?"
Concealed by a dark cloak, the god quickly jumped up and in one barely perceptible movement, as if he momentarily spread his wings, was suddenly facing his brother. Eversquator wrinkled his brow, but his gaze didn't flinch. The lines of blood that emanated from the black abyss of Herishes's eyes against his completely white, chalk-like face looked terrifying.
"Oh, yes, the names that carry true joy to the world. Tartarus, Sotan, Asmodeus. My creations are being cursed by all the sentient races, begging your Illuna for protection. I hope that the day would come when my creations from beyond the confines of Barleona would find a crack in the defense of this world and gladden everyone with their presence. But you know that this will never happen. Father had forbidden us to interfere in the affairs of this world. Yet, for each of your monsters, I will create a hero. Tell me, what had disturbed you so now?"
"Disturbed?"
Herishes laughed hysterically.
"No, brother. I am calmer than ever. Today, my plan will finally be accomplished. Are you at it again? You killed me hundreds of times, but I returned every time. Please understand, brother. We cannot retire to our rest as our father did. He was whole, but we are whole only together.
That means that we have to be united, came the dark god's conclusion, after which he shouted, Riordalox, you know what to do.
A black shadow darted by, and a vampire appeared next to Harishes.
I command the vampires to guard my throne and to hand it over to the Chosen One. From now on, you shall live forever.
Riordalox bowed, obediently accepting his master's decision.
I don't understand what it is that you've planned, brother, said Eversquitor, somewhat hesitantly. Another death would bring nothing, and once again you shall be punished. What are you trying to achieve?
Harishes broke into an evil smile, moved his hand across his face, spreading apart his bloodied hair, disappeared, and emerged at his brother's back.
Death is just an end of a cycle, he whispered into the ear of the frozen Eversquitor. You and I shall go further and break this vicious circle. I have conceived of a force that hates our world, hates it with its whole being. But the limitations set by our father would not allow it to wield power openly in Barleona. It needs a master and an ocean of energy. Riordalox, my pet vampire, will find this master, and our power will serve as this source for eternity. We will sink into non-existence and lose our essence, but then your beloved Barleona will also descend into shadow. This will not be darkness, no. This is something that hates both light and darkness in equal measure.
Harishes embraced his brother and sat on the throne together with him. There was a bright flash, and no trace remained of the sons of Barleona's creator. They were absorbed. The previously white surface of the throne had become covered in shifting black blotches. It hummed like a hive full of agitated bees, but regained its former appearance just a minute later. The stone had accepted the gods.
You are mistaken, master, said the vampire, who appeared and was carefully examining the now levitating throne. I happen to like this world, so I will not carry out your last order. I may pay with my life for this disobedience, but no mortal hand will ever touch your throne.
My father kept his promise, and for many thousands of years I guarded the throne of the Son of the Creator. 30 years ago, Garanika found me, coming in search of knowledge. I taught him everything I knew about shamans. But then Midial's group entered the Dark Forest, and the world came face to face with Harishes's progeny. The throne had been stolen. They are yours now, Emperor. My thanks for letting me speak my fill.
"Is there anyone else wishing to speak to these sentients?" asked the Emperor, surveying those present.
"Mayan, are you not reading the messages on purpose?"
Anastaria couldn't take it anymore.
"Send me the video before you're taken away."
Oops. I pulled the chat window back in its proper place and, as I sent the video to the girl, quickly glanced at the text there.
"Mayan, send the video. Mayan, for heaven's sake, give the video before it's too late. You cack-handed shaman, I'll kill you. Give me the video."
And about 40 messages along those lines.
"I don't know what you mean, Iluna's chosen," said the Emperor. "So I'll take it that everyone has had their say. I, the Emperor of Malabar, accuse Free Citizen Mayan, the great shaman dragon, of killing the great Yalaninka, High Shaman Almas, and the future Prince of the Empire, Slate. Kornik, the Harbinger Shaman, will act as an additional accuser, bringing charges against Mayan of betraying the tenets of shamanism and destroying his totem, an original dragon. The trial over Mayan will take place this evening and will be presided over by the goddess Iluna."
"No need to send anything. I've got it,"
came another message from Anastaria.
"Nothing like this has ever happened in my memory. You're lucky, dragon. If you manage to make it out of the mines, you owe me another incredible deed for everything I have been through and lost. I will tell you about it later when we meet."
Again, a bunch of secretive hints and omissions. I was about to write something like, "Sure, I'll just drop everything and start running around performing incredible deeds," when the surrounding world blinked, and I felt a pain in my chest. Enormous 100-meter cliffs towering all over the mine perimeter. The overhanging rocky caps, the valley, divided in two by a fence, with the smithy and the barracks on one side and the sound of ringing picks on the other. The green grass, blue sky, and complete absence of dust. There was even a fresh breeze. The 3,800 reputation points of esteem with the guards had their benefits. I looked at the sign that hung over the administration building and chuckled at its fitting nature. No doubt about it. Welcome to the Pryke Copper Mine.
"Mayan?"
The surprised exclamation of the guard tore me away from taking in the painfully familiar picture.
"What are you doing here? You don't even have the mark of a criminal on you."
"I'm happy to see you too, Bronx. I've just decided to take a break. Visit my old acquaintances and see how they were getting on," I greeted the stocky guard, who was scratching his chin in surprise, unsure of how he was meant to behave himself with me. After all, Pryke was a place for criminals, and here was a visitor who turned up outside the designated visiting days. This NPC's poor imitator probably deployed all its resources just to try to come to some kind of a decision. "How about you take me to the head of the camp? He can decide what should be done next." I dropped a hint to the guard, who just over half a year ago greeted me with a weapon pointed at my back.
"That it?" said Bronx happily, when a logical chain formed within his head.
Any new arrival, whoever he was, should be taken to the boss. He can figure out what I was doing here, while a guard's task was simple, to make sure that there were no obvious dirty tricks played at the mine.
"Come, let me take you there, then. I bet you forgot the way already, eh?"
The administration building didn't change from the time of my last visit. Elegant statues, paintings on the walls, a large crystal chandelier, carpets, carved wood, and a light, cool breeze. It was as if I never left here. I hesitated by the entrance of the mine governor's office. After all, the orc was a striking character who commanded respect. Shook my head, dismissing any inner quivers, and pulled the door handle. What must be, must be. You can't avoid the unavoidable, and if I'm back in Pryke for a long time, I'll have to relearn how to deal with people here all over again.
"Mayan,"
sounded the low and calm bass of the governor the moment I stepped into the office. In the last 3 months since I've seen him, the orc didn't change a bit. Although, how could an NPC change? This is a game, after all.
"The shaman who betrayed everything that shamans hold dear, the killer of Almas, his teacher, the great Yalaninka, and his own totem."
The orc spoke the words slowly, as if hammering yet another nail into the chain that was meant to hold me in Pryke. And like an invisible weight, this chain pressed on me, pushing me to fall on my knees and squeal pitifully before the orc. A bit of deja vu right there. Our very first meeting, when I failed to answer a direct question from the boss, didn't turn out that great either. I remember how I then, for the first time, came across the phenomenon of charisma. But now...
"I can see someone already managed to snitch on me," I growled, using all my strength to stay on my feet.
With my mind, I understood that right now I was spoiling what was left of my relationship with the camp boss, and that if I do get stuck here for 7 years now, things were going to be far from easy for me. This is why the correct thing would have been to fall to the floor and hope that the governor would relent and turn off his pressure. Like hell I will. I'm a shaman, and have no intention of falling to the floor before some orc. For a few moments I fought the desire to curl up and whimper, and even almost came to terms with the weight, when I suddenly caught Prontho's eyes. I never thought that a gaze could be given the adjectives of stony, implacable, incontestable, but that was exactly the look the orc was giving me. If I thought that I had felt the effect of the governor's charisma prior to this, I was gravely mistaken. Now I had an idea of how Hercules must have felt when the dome of the sky was put on his shoulders. I may not have landed the job of the hero from ancient Greek myths, but that didn't make things any easier for me.
"I do not need to read messages. I'm a shaman."
Had I not been exposed to the voices of the lieutenant, the general, and the patriarch in the last 2 weeks, I would have crumbled right now. NPCs sure like dropping a load of debuffs on you, as if it somehow makes a conversation easier for them. In your dreams. So, he's a shaman, is he? Then I'll surprise him. I'm not exactly some random noob either.
"If you're a shaman, then turn off your head and listen to yourself."
Ooh. Looks like I can match the orc in the growling department. We were still staring into each other's eyes, so I could think of nothing better than to start giving thought commands to him.
"Bow before me.
to your knees." This was nonsense, of course, but I wasn't giving up without a fight, even if all the fighting only happened inside my head. The main thing was not to fall myself.
"It matters little what I feel. The main thing is what you did."
Prontho had no intention of giving ground, and my silent commands, by the looks of it, were only the fruit of my fevered imagination.
"Since when did High Shaman Prontho manage to turn into a mage?"
My left foot traitorously bent, and I fell to one knee. "Never mind. I can pretend that I'm honoring the rank of High Shaman. It's even easier to stand like this. The main thing was not to stop and to keep fighting. Kneel."
"It is not for you to rebuke me, traitor,"
Prontho interrupted me, almost shocking me into losing concentration, and fell to one knee. Can my commands be working after all?
"I walked my path to the end, regardless of the consequences, and did not once betray the precepts of the Supreme Spirits, but you surrendered."
Getting each word out was a huge struggle. So at the end of my long speech, I couldn't help myself and fell to both knees. The orc continued piling on the pressure. "No matter. I can do that too.
Bow to me."
"I did not surrender."
The governor tried to get to his feet, but as soon as he rose a little, both his legs gave way and, like me, he ended up on his knees. For some time we were both silent, each forcing the other to completely fall to the floor, until I said,
"Since you are still fighting, tell me what happened in the fight between you and Shyam."
I roared like a wild beast and, not having the foggiest where I got all this strength, rose to my feet. My head was going into a crazy spin, like that of a completely unprepared person that swam 100 meters at his very top speed. The orc's office seemed to sway and distort, like in a curved mirror. But I remained upright. I was reeling, but still standing.
"That's none of your business. Your business is to mine ore and be silent."
The orc tried to repeat my feat and get up, but as soon as he lifted his knee, he dropped to the floor like a broken doll.
"Silent my ass, Mr. Tough Guy. I need to know what happened, and you will tell me everything."
These were the last words that I managed to utter before the world underhandedly began to swim, filled with dark colors, informed me that my charisma increased to 72 points, and turned off my consciousness.
That's it. The shift is over.
Only 2 hours remained to hand in the daily quota and eat. Otherwise, my stomach would kick the bucket and send me for respawn. I had to get up and go to Cart to get the ore. He's probably managed to buy some up by now. I'll have to make a few more rings in the evening. There's still a lot of names to get through on the buyer's list. But the first thing I had to do was to get up and make it in time for the meal. I rolled over to the side, pulled my legs under me, and leant with my arms on the floor. I was able to lift myself an entire 2 centimeters off the ground before a firework going off in my head threw me back down. My head was buzzing so loudly that it felt like 2 steam engines were chasing each other on old cracked tracks inside my skull. The train cars were jerking from side to side, threatening to topple over into a ditch, but the machinists were confidently driving their carriages along the brain, periodically picking up gray matter with their spades and throwing it into the fire. The train was doing well. It has something to run on, and I, as a prisoner, didn't really need much. The main thing was getting enough ore for the quota.
"Get up. They've already opened the portal for you. You are expected at the trial."
The orc's low bass sent the machinists to their well-earned rest, allowing my head to clear up straight away. I'm in Pryke. Cart's already been free for 4 months. I'm about to be tried, and just a short time ago the mine boss and I were attempting to see who was more well-endowed in the charisma department. My head was no longer buzzing, so I could get up and take a look around. Yeah. If I looked the same as the orc, I might easily disrupt the upcoming trial. Prontho's face consisted of one large bruise, looking like a herd of rhinos just trampled all over it. One of his eyes was so swollen that you could hardly see it anymore, and the scarce white hair of the governor was all messed up, as if he was following the latest fashion trend. Was this all the result of our confrontation? From what I could remember, I didn't touch the orc, let alone give him a good kicking.
"This way."
Prontho pointed to the shimmering teleportation portal.
"A herald came for you, saw how you looked, got me up, and ordered me to clean up the accused. Here, take this."
So it seems I was right in thinking that my appearance left much to be desired. Prontho handed me a flask with the elixir of full restoration, which would return the character's gaming avatar to its initial appearance. I drank half of it, that'll do for me, and handed the rest to the orc. He had no business appearing before the prisoners looking like that. It doesn't matter how many copies of the orc there were. I had one in front of me right now, and he had to maintain his authority. Accepting the flask, the governor drank its contents, no questions asked. You still could see some of the swelling, but his eye regained its natural appearance.
"That'll do,"
said Prontho, after looking me over carefully from every side.
"Now go. You shouldn't keep the Emperor waiting."
There was about 2 meters, or 4 paces, between me and the portal, but as soon as I crossed half of that distance, the orc spoke.
"While you are tying the strings on your shoes and coat..." "Stop!"
barked the governor, when I took another step.
"It wouldn't be right to appear before the Emperor looking all shabby. So, while you are tidying yourself up, I think I will tell you a little story. Do tie up your coat while you're at it,"
suggested the orc, despite my coat being in an ideal condition and the small strings that hung on it just for decoration, clearly not untied in any way. But if the orc demands it, I should obey, especially since I was about to become a witness to a unique phenomenon, stories from the head of the Pryke Mine.
"Once upon a time, there lived one naive shaman who believed in justice. He thought that if he combined the strength of several shamans and created a circle, he would have a chance of stopping a traitor who tried to end the lives of his own brothers. The naive shaman brought his proposal before the council, but was ridiculed by the head of the council, the traitor's brother. Shyam laughed at the idea and called the shaman a panic spreader. Knowing that this went against all the tenets of his ancestors, the naive shaman challenged the head of the council. He knew what a defeat might cost him, but he couldn't stand idly and watch Guernica destroying his brothers. As soon as the two rivals entered the ritual circle, the fight had commenced. Both the head of the council and the naive shaman were high shamans, so the result of the fight should have been decided by their combat prowess. Shyam was a weak high shaman, so after only 5 summonings, he was thrown to the ground. All he had to do was finish him off, but the naive shaman hesitated. He still hoped that the head of the council made a genuine mistake, and there was no need to kill him. He really shouldn't have done that. Shyam jumped to his feet, grabbed the shaman, and strange dark phantoms spewed out of his hands. But these weren't spirits, because they cut through the defense as if it was never there. No one else saw these phantoms, but they were there. The naive shaman had lost, and Shyam decided to mock him, allowing him to live, but stripping him of his shamanism. That's the way the story goes. I hope that it helps you.
So Shyam used the shadows during his fight with Prontho? He's one of Guernica's followers. The head of the Shaman Council is a traitor.
Update to the Restoration of Justice quest. The High Shaman Prontho told you the truth about the duel between him and Shyam. Address the Shaman Council and accuse Shyam of betrayal.
Right. Preening session over.
Prontho was done with his tale now.
They'll be getting impatient. Mayan.
I turned and looked into the gray eyes of the Pryke Mine governor.
They weren't torturing me for several months, trying to break me, so I'm capable of thinking clearly. Try to understand, Kornik, and prove to all of them that you deserve the title of Great Shaman. Go now.
The cold blue glow of the portal that surrounded me on every side couldn't wash off the warm feeling that arose in my chest. However the upcoming trial went, at least one high shaman believes in me, and this means that others may do too. I just needed time. The place where the portal took me looked nothing like a regular courthouse, such as the one in Anhur's. In the capital, the player was taken to an NPC judge, where, in an office, sitting behind an enormous table, the latter delivered the verdict. Not guilty and free to go, or guilty and sentenced to community service. But here, after checking that video recording was still on, I looked around. If I was Gulliver, I might have thought that I was standing in the midst of a Lilliputian circus. A small arena, no more than 2 by 2 meters, covered in yellow sand, and seats placed around the entire perimeter.
The bright light from 5 projectors was aimed straight at me, as if I was some actor whose performance was awaited by an audience. But some things were different, too. The arena was surrounded by a 1.5-meter tall wall, covered in shining spikes. These were probably in place to prevent the accused from escaping. There were just 2 rows of seats, all of which were currently occupied. The back rows, barely visible through the bright light of the projectors, were assigned to my clan. Anastaria, Plinto, Barcina, the officers. The future of these players was hanging on what the court was about to decide, and I thought that at this point nothing depended on me anymore. This was the revelation that struck me when I saw the eyes of those that occupied the front row. The Emperor, the Dark Lord, Cornick, the High Priestess, several advisors, and masters. They all looked at me as if the sentence has already been passed and not subject to appeal. I selected Anastaria and sent her the video that I recorded at Pryke. If I was being sent for long rest at the mines right after all this, then all the privileges of a provisionally free citizen would disappear.
I promised you, Shaman, that we would meet after you finish your assignments in the Dark Forest, came the voice of Iluna, and a second later the last free seat was occupied. The goddess arrived to dispense justice. Nati, please announce the reason why this free citizen has appeared in my court.
Rising from his seat, the Emperor announced,
I, the Emperor of Malabar, accuse Free Citizen Mayen, the great Shaman Dragon, of killing the great Yalaninka, High Shaman Almas, and the future Prince of the Empire, Slight. Cornick, the Harbinger Shaman, will act as an additional accuser, bringing charges against Mayen of betraying the tenets of shamanism and destroying his totem, an original dragon. I am demanding his destruction.
Cornick, do you confirm the words of the Emperor?
Iluna looked at the Harbinger.
Yes, goddess.
The shaman stood up and bowed to Iluna.
This sentient destroyed everything which shamans believe in. There is no place for him in Baliona.
Who will be defending man's interests?
Asked the goddess, and looked around those present.
Or shall I appoint a defender for him myself, Emperor?
I don't have any impartial subjects, goddess. The great Yalaninka is the symbol of Baliona, and not a single mortal would find it within himself her killer.
In that case, we have to change the place of the hearing. I appoint Dragon Aranoxitolycus as the defender of this accused. Due to the existing limitations, he cannot enter our world, so we will travel to his.
Iluna closed her eyes and lifted her arms, and the surrounding world changed. There was glistening snow instead of the sand under our feet, chunks of stone instead of the chairs, and the walls changed to the cliffs of the world of the dragons.
My greetings to you, Iluna. I expected you and your subjects later,
came Renox's slow growl, and an enormous green dragon landed on the modest-sized platform.
Son, Renox greeted me with a slight nod. I see you just can't keep out of trouble, eh?
Last time you gathered all the great heroes of Malabar, and now its rulers. I dread to imagine our next meeting. Will you be surrounded by gods, then?
I, Emperor of Malabar, accuse free citizen Mayen.
Nati got up from his stone, repeating the words of the accusation.
I, High Dragon Aranoxotelicus, refute the accusations of the Emperor and the Shaman Harbinger Kornik,
said Renox solemnly.
As witnesses I shall call.
Hi there, brother. Listen, father told me that you learned how to transform. Can you show me?
Oh.
Draco, who practically knocked me off my feet, froze and looked around, embarrassed.
Sorry. Is this a bad time, Dad?
Let me answer in your stead,
replied a voice so familiar that I involuntarily started and then found myself staring at the high shaman who appeared from behind the rocks. Almas!
If you bypass all the expletives, it can be put very simply. You've ruined a very beautiful moment. You know,
he turned to Renox,
I think I finally understand why Mayen managed to pick him. They're of one kind. Prohibitions? Rules? Restrictions? Nope. Never heard of them.
But Almas,
whined Draco with a hurt look, curled around my feet and froze after hiding his head under his tail. The Emperor remained unperturbed and calm, since not a word was said now about Yalaninka and Slate. But Kornik was quite a sight. Everyone is familiar with the expression sheer shock, but it didn't cover even 1% of what the goblin was experiencing right now. His usual green color was all gone. Right now, we had a lobster red sentient sitting in front of us who was striving with all his might to dissolve into his stone seat.
Shaman, you are not worthy. You betrayed everything.
Well, well, it's good to come down to earth sometimes.
My first witness answered any relevant questions by his very appearance, continued Renox. So I shall invite the second one. Iluna, if you please.
The dragon bowed before the goddess and looked at her expectantly.
Archangel Yalaninka is being summoned as a witness.
Iluna's voice echoed through the mountains.
You summon me, mother?
There was a clap, and a young woman appeared next to Renox, her dazzlingly bright wings, seemingly breaking every law of physics, touched each of those present, completely restoring them and giving them several beneficial buffs. The silver-winged had turned into the bright-winged one.
"Daughter, tell everyone of the last moments of your earthly life,"
asked the goddess.
"An epidemic had struck Priant, and so I decided to risk a shortcut, flying right across the mountains. Halfway, the charge in the wings had run out, and I fell, managing to grab a ledge just at the right moment. I knew that my hour had come, but then I saw this human, dragon, and asked his help. After this..."
Yalaninka went on to tell everything that had happened during my first trial, adding her own sensations and emotions to the tale.
"I jumped down, and right before I reached the ground, Iluna took me into her heavenly host. Thank you, my daughter. You may return now.
The goddess thanked her, and Yelaninka disappeared.
For a more complete picture,
came Renox's voice again, not allowing anyone to put in a word or share their feelings,
I shall summon the authors of the plan behind everything that was done by great Shaman Mayen. I will admit that I was responsible for certain details, but the general concept and implementation entirely belongs to them. I am calling the supreme spirits of the higher and lower worlds as witnesses.
They are here,
uttered Kornik in a voice of one condemned to death,
to avoid traumatizing the free citizens who are not used to the shamanistic gods. The spirits will be speaking through me.
Kornik's eyes glazed over. He flew into the air, and the supreme spirits began their tale.
For a long time now, we have desired to understand the source of Garanika's power. A great shaman, which almost became a high one, at one point renounced us. This was strange and incomprehensible. We knew that the only sentient in Barleona capable of telling us about Garanika was the Patriarch, but we existed in different worlds and unworkable relations with him. Patriarch didn't trust anyone, so communicating with him would have been pointless. When Mayen entered the astral plane for the first time, breaking every possible shamanistic law by doing so, we were struck with an idea. In order to discover the enemy's power, we had to send him an apprentice, a sentient. Suitable for this role happened to be nearby, so we started to act. We knew that Mayen would have to renounce everything that he believed in 4 times. His race, his teacher, his totem, and his friend.
Kornik twitched, as if even through the Supreme One's control, the word friend meant a lot to him, and then continued to broadcast the spirits.
First of all, we deprived Mayen of the ability to summon his totem. There is no punishment for destroying a shadow in the astral plane. On the contrary, we were glad that the shaman found a creative way of destroying them, but we wanted to preserve his dragon. Then we sent him to Garanika, allowing him to throw a protective dome over him and removing an obstacle in the form of Plinto the Bloodied. That was the only thing we could do without getting detected by Garanika. Thus, we left Mayen alone and started to observe his actions. First came Yelaninka. Garanika wanted to send Mayen to a time when she was in her prime, but the High Dragon aided us. He corrected the flow of time, and Mayen ended up by Yelaninka at the time of her death. We thought that he would just turn away and allow her to fall, but you heard from the Archangel how it really happened. The second trial consisted of killing his first teacher. We had a chat with Almas, and since he's the only existing shaman illusionist, thought of a way to convincingly stage his death. Almas summoned a spirit with which Mayan had to fight, but instead of fighting, the would-be apprentice wanted to talk and risked failing the trial. So Almas attacked first. After Mayan pushed away the projection, Almas withered the spirit and unsummoned him, leaving the staff to aid his apprentice. A high shaman looks awkward without a staff. Mayan was unable to complete the third trial because he couldn't summon his totem, but the fourth one he failed fair and square by sticking the horn into Guernica instead of Cornic. The only thing that didn't fit into our plans was the appearance of the free citizens and Slate's death. Emperor, we understand that the echo of the shaman's deeds went through the entire Barleona, but only you are responsible for the deaths of 38,246 free citizens and the future Prince of Malabar. For unshakable faith in his own abilities, and for following the taken decision regardless of possible penalties and hardships, we, the supreme spirits of the higher and lower worlds, declare Mayan to be a high shaman. That is all.
Character class update. Class Great Shaman has been replaced by High Shaman. Plus 1,000 to reputation with the supreme spirits of the higher and lower worlds. Current level, friendly. You are 2,390 points away from the status of respect.
Cornic descended from the air and, drained, leant back into his stone seat. Acting as the conduit of the spirits, took nearly all his strength.
In view of what we've just heard, the surrounding world was pierced by the Emperor's cold voice, I am dropping all charges against Mayan. His actions have been deemed to be beneficial to the Empire, for which reason I am offering the High Shaman Mayan the post of a commissioned ambassador of the Empire to the Kingdom of the Dwarves. Our ally is being harassed by armies of barbarians encroaching from the Freelands. You must find out the reason behind such frenzied attacks and remove it. You will be able to obtain a portal to the lands of the dwarves from any herald as soon as you summon him, but not later than a month from this moment. Should he succeed in helping the King of the Dwarves within the next 6 months, the clan will receive Castle Urusai into its ownership. The head of the clan, the title of an earl, and the rest of its leaders, the titles of barons. This is my decision.
Quest available. Inevitable evil. Description. The Kingdom of the Dwarves. Deadline for completion, 6 months. Quest type, clan-based unique. Reward, Urusai Castle. The title of an earl for the head of the clan. Title of a baron for the officers, keepers, and treasurer of the clan. penalty for failing or refusing the quest, dislike with the Emperor.
So be it, said Iluna, the moment I accepted the quest. I confirm the Emperor's words. Mayan and all the members of his clan have been found not guilty.
There was a thunderclap, like an echo of some unseen lightning, and once again the surrounding scenery had changed. Judging by the map, which I immediately opened, we were at the very center of the Castle of the Fallen. But right now, there was nothing here to remind us that it ever existed. We were on an ordinary green glade, already covered by small young trees. In the course of a day, the Guardian managed to destroy all reminders of Guernica or Midial. Draco, Renox, and Almas remained in the world of the dragons. The Emperor and the Dark Lord vanished almost immediately, without saying a word, but I managed to glance at the attractiveness in their properties just before they did that. 65 points with the Emperor, and 46 points with the Dark Lord. Great! Things were looking up. Advisors and masters were discussing something, returning to their places once they were done. Then only Cornick, Beth, and Iluna remained.
Mayan,
the High Priestess immediately spoke to me.
It is now time to give you and your people the reward for finding the Stone of Light. Thank you all.
The players lit up like a bunch of Christmas trees when a wave of new levels and reputation increases went through the clan, and then the High Priestess came up to each player, giving them flasks with Water of Life. I must remember to ask Anastaria what that thing was for, and kissed them on the forehead. It turned out that Iluna's blessing, third rank — all this happened despite the goddess standing right there and observing the actions of her priestess — increased all the main stats by 15%. And this lasted as long as the character existed, or as long as the player remained in the goddess's favor.
"And it is finally my turn to reward Mayan," smiled the goddess. "You and your people deserve to be the talk of all in Barleona. But I think that a simple item reward, which you would soon outgrow, would be insufficient. I would like to give you something which had never been and will never be gained by any clan in Barleona. This will earn you enemies who will be jealous of this gift, but it is worth it. Behold."
A flaming message appeared in the air right in front of Iluna, which was seen not only by myself, but also by the rest of the clan.
"You may now change the name of your clan to Legends of Barleona, reserved name. If you accept this name, each member of your clan will receive a small projection of their race."
Legends of Barleona and projections? I looked at Barcina's wide eyes, Plinto's grin, the now habitually dropped jaws of my officers, and Anastaria doing her best to look imperturbable, and realized that they've already made the decision. "I thank you for this gift, goddess. This is a truly divine reward." There was another clap of thunder, and only players remained on the dark forest glade.
"Isn't she a sweetie?"
Anastaria's impassiveness vanished in a flash when she saw a small, about 10-centimeter-long siren, which was coiling itself around the girl's hand. Stacy started to move her arm in different directions, and the siren sped around it happily, emitting squeals that no one, possibly except her owner, could hear.
Periodically, the projection stopped and froze, with a mirror appearing before it. And then the siren began to look at herself from every side, like a little girl who finally got at her mother's jewelry.
Crunch!
A strange sound.